Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is the Goals, Health, and Success Show. This is Dr. John DeWitt, and I am here to talk with anyone that has ever struggled with getting what they want in life. They are always sitting back saying, why is everybody else getting success? Why are my friends success? I know I work harder than them, and they're getting it, and I'm not. What's the problem? I have also been there. I must admit, it has been a long challenge, fraught with all kinds of pitfalls, hurdles, all kinds of crazy stuff. But a little bit about me. I am from a small town. Well, not necessarily a small town. It just depends. I live in Southern California now, but originally I am from Fort Smith, Arkansas. It's the second biggest city in the state, a whopping 85,000 strong. It might be 86,000 now, but it is one of those things where you can't think that just because you're from a small place, you can't do big things. And I went on to do a lot of really great, exciting things, traveled the world, played football in Scotland and Spain and Germany and with the Oilers in Houston, which was a lot of fun. I got to meet a lot of really cool people. But the point of this show is to help people get to where they want to be with their goals, with their health, with their financial situation. And I mean, I don't claim to know everything. I just want to share my story and help answer any questions that people might have. And if I can help them along their path to success, then that is just a blessing for me. So I originally was, like I said, born in Fort Smith, Arkansas, kind of a little guy, never really did a whole lot. I was tall, but I was really thin. And I had an issue when I was playing football back, I don't even know when that was. First year I played football was probably 1986. And once we got to high school, I was set to have the starting defensive end position. The guy in front of me, his name was Art Gramling. And interesting name, I thought. And so I was really excited to get in there and start playing. And woke up one morning after the very first couple of practices during two-a-days. And when I got up in the morning to go to the bathroom, it was like great Kool-Aid coming out. I said, whoa, that can't be good. And so long story short, the trainer said, you need to get some tests done. I had an amazing amount of blood in my urine, and they said, you have to go do a bunch of tests. And I basically missed all of training camp, which wasn't a bad thing for me because training camp's really hard. And then I found out that I had a kidney that was 70% smaller than one was 70% smaller than the other. And so I was kind of like, okay, so what does that mean? And the first doctor said, well, you can't play football anymore, because if you get hit on your good kidney, your other kidney isn't strong enough or big enough to actually allow you to survive. And so I was like, whoa, okay. And this was really upsetting to my dad and to myself. And we were like, okay, well, what's the answer? And so we got second and third opinions until finally we found a doctor that said, well, I don't think it's that bad. Maybe you can wear this pad that protects your healthy kidney. And so I wore this big neoprene, like, rubber belt that was about six inches wide that had this big plastic cup that would, like, cover it on one side of my kidney in the back in case so I couldn't get hit on that particular kidney. And, I mean, when you're playing in Arkansas when it's 115 degrees outside, it was ridiculous because you're so hot and then you have this six-inch rubber belt on that's just making you even more hot. It was just ridiculous. So finally, after that first season, I mean, I ended up not starting that year because I missed training camp. We went to the state championship game, and we ended up losing to our crosstown rivals, which was kind of depressing, but I hardly played at all. And then I just decided, you know what, if I get hit, I get hit. I'm not going to wear that strap around my waist anymore. And my senior year, ironically, we ended up going back playing the exact same team, and we won the championship 7-6. So it was not much fun to watch, but it was a lot of fun to be a part of. I had the most tackles I'd ever had of any. I was a defensive end, had the most tackles I'd ever had in any game. And it was just such a great experience because I was playing as if it was the last game I was ever going to play, because I had no aspirations to play in college. I didn't think it was ever going to happen. And then I applied to a bunch of different schools, senior in high school, and actually got accepted to Vanderbilt University. And I thought that, you know, my best friend's sister had gone there and done really well with sports. And so I thought, well, that was kind of neat. And it was a really well-respected university. So I said, okay, I'll go there. So I go there, and my parents were just kind of like, okay, here's the deal. Vanderbilt, private school, not very big, very expensive, however. You need to focus on getting a scholarship, because basically we can't afford to have you go there your entire college career if you don't get a scholarship. It's just way too expensive. So I said, okay, so I put that on my goal list. I said, okay, this is the goal. I'm going to do everything I can to achieve that goal. And a big part of that was I cut out anything that was going to keep me from achieving that goal, anything that I thought would give me an excuse to say, oh, well, I didn't make it because I was, you know, drinking alcohol or something like that, or because I wasn't working out, or because I wasn't focused enough. And so literally it was, I got a little obsessed, and I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. No soda, freshman year in college, no soda, no alcohol. I read a chapter out of my Bible every night. I visualized every single day what was going to happen. I was like, I'd go out, there was a little wall on a ramp that went up to the practice facility, and I would sit on that wall for 30 minutes and just focus on what I wanted to do that day in practice. So, I mean, I didn't get a scholarship that first semester, and so I basically was just a walk-on, and so you hold the dummy, and that's pretty much it. And it's really interesting because there was a guy, his last name was Roselli, that was a walk-on as well, and he always used to look at me before practice and stick his thumb up in the air and say, hey, are you ready? And he's like, basically, because we just sit around with our thumbs up where the sun doesn't shine, and you sit there and don't do anything. And I just was kind of interested by his attitude towards the whole thing. In my mind, I was just like, you have to take every opportunity to show the coaches what you can do. And usually that ended up being at the very end of a scrimmage or something like that, and you just had to go out and do the best you could. So I would go out there, visualize, try to block out all the negativity and doubt that all these other guys were sharing. And I weighed a whopping, I was 6'4", probably weighed, I think, 213 pounds as a defensive end, which was kind of comical. It was really funny because when they took the team picture, they didn't even have my name on the back of my jersey because I was just a walk-on. They didn't have the jerseys with the names on them yet, and so at least for the walk-ons. So anyway, go out there and really praying every day and just really focused, trying to do the best I can. And there was one particular scrimmage where there was a guy on the team, a senior, Greg. What's Greg's last name? It's not important, but Greg was this huge guy. He was about 6'6", 6'7", 300-plus pounds, and he was an offensive lineman. And we were in the scrimmage, and I was going against him. And on this one particular play, I beat him around the outside on a pass and got to the quarterback. And the head coach got so upset, he said, no, run that play again. Ran the play again. I beat him again. And they said, okay, stop everybody. I just want Greg and DeWitt to go. And I beat this guy like two or three times in a row. And the head coach was just like, well, Greg, I guess that's the best you can do. And so then from then on after practice, I would ask the coaches, you know, do I have a scholarship yet? And they said, no, just keep doing what you're doing. I said, okay. So at the end of the season, the head coach said, you have your postseason meetings. And he said, come on in here, John. I said, okay. Sat down, and he said, I just want you to know, as far as I'm concerned, as of right now, you're on full scholarship. And the interesting thing, and the reason I'm telling you this story, is because I had literally visualized it and believed it with every essence of my being so much that when he actually did tell me that I had achieved my goal, that I wasn't even surprised. I didn't jump up and down. I was happy, but I wasn't like super surprised or excited about it, because I was just like, well, yeah, I've been waiting for everybody to catch up. And so that's how you have to be when you set a goal in your life. You have to almost obsess over it and focus on it 24/7. That's all you're thinking about. That's all you want to do. Everything you do, every decision you make in life, you have to be, has to move you closer to that goal. And so I got my scholarship, and I told the head coach, it was kind of funny. I told him, I said, well, can you do me a favor? Because this was in November. And I said, can you write my parents a letter? Because my parents had no idea. I said, can you write my parents a letter on the school stationery and say that I got the scholarship and explain what happened? And he said, sure, I would love that. And so he wrote me a letter, and I remember exactly what it said. It said, congratulations to you. John has earned a full scholarship to Vanderbilt. We thank the world of him. You must be very proud. And Watson Brown was the head coach at the time, and I was really appreciative. And I said, okay, well, that's cool. And so I kept that letter, put it in a big envelope, and I actually put it under the Christmas tree that year. And so that was the present to my parents, was this scholarship that was probably back then was worth like $100,000 for, you know, the full 4 years at Vanderbilt. And I, even then, it was funny because when they opened it, I thought they'd be happy, but they were hysterically happy. My dad was crying. My mom was crying. My dad's on the phone calling all his friends saying, guess what John gave us for Christmas? Can't believe it. It's amazing. And it just goes back to the fact when you own what you want in life and when you decide you are going to get it, regardless of what anybody says, you don't even listen to what everybody says because they're not in your head. They don't know what you're thinking every single day, and there is no other option. So they were so excited because they didn't know that that was how I was about the whole situation. But I was, and that's why I got what I wanted. But the cautionary tale is that when you set a really huge goal, you need to make sure that when you get close to attaining that goal, that you have another goal after that. Because I had no idea in my mind, and Tony Robbins talks about this all the time, it's like you don't want to set a goal and then achieve it and then just be in your mind, be like, oh, is that all there is? So that was something that I suffered from. I got my scholarship. All my buddies were excited. They're saying, hey, great, you're a part of the group now, and that's cool. But you know, now what, you're going to start and you're just going to be amazing. It's going to be great. You're going to be all conference, all everything. And that detail was something that I had overlooked. And so I went on. I mean, I got second team all conference my junior year, which was great. That was preseason all conference. And I went on and tried out with the 49ers. And that was kind of an interesting thing because while I was in school, I had one of my best friends was a really great athlete that played on my high school state championship team. I mean, he was like the big star, and I would always call him before the seasons would start, before training camp would start, and say, you know, what do you think we should do? I'm a little worried that I'm not going to be able to get this all done, and I don't really know exactly how to do it. And he was like, oh, you know what to do, just do it. And it was just nice to have him, somebody I could call to keep me accountable, to be like, yeah, you know what to do, just do it. And, you know, unfortunately, he suffered from a lot of depression and things like that. And it was a really harsh reality check because my sophomore year, he actually ended up committing suicide. And so that was just a slap in the face of, okay, my anchor, the person I used to go to in relation to any kind of football thing, is gone, and there's no more person to call to say, hey, you know, I'm having my doubts like I always do. Can you give me a little, you know, you're going to do it? And he was gone, and he had just checked out. And it's one of those things, unfortunately, years later, I would have, you know, several other people that I'm very, 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 very close to that committed suicide. And it's just such a weird for your brain to process because you're fighting so hard to be successful and do everything you can in life, and then these vital players that are around you are choosing to not be a part of life at all anymore, and it just it's such a hard thing to grasp. So that happened my junior year in college, and then when I was done with school, I went on to try out for the 49ers, and it was a really sad situation because I went to training camp. That was back when Jerry Rice was there, and Bryant Young, his from Notre Dame, it was his first year. He was one of the top draft picks and super nice guy. A lot of really great guys there on the team. But I literally remember sitting in the locker room before camp or before practice, and looking at all the stuff, all the 49er stuff, I thought it was really cool. And, you know, you're in the locker room, you're around all these guys you've seen on TV. And I literally made a conscious decision. I mean, it just, and I still, looking back, don't realize even now how much of an effect that, my friend killing himself really affected me, because I made a conscious decision sitting there saying, okay, I can try really hard, I can get really stressed out and, you know, say I'm going to go all in and I'm going to make this happen, or I can just enjoy the experience and, you know, let whatever happens, happens. And unfortunately, I made the decision to just kind of enjoy the trip and enjoy practice and kind of do my thing. And, you know, when that, with that kind of halfway in, halfway out attitude, you're not going to get anything that you want in life. And so, you know, unfortunately, they let me go. I went on to coach my high school football team, or an assistant coach my high school football team for a year, which was really fun. I also volunteered a lot, did a lot of volunteer work at the church with the youth group there. And I remember when I was coaching the team, before games, I would get so excited and so fired up before games that I would just be like, oh my gosh, you guys got to be so fired up to play because these guys are, you know, talking trash and all that. I mean, this is just ridiculous. You got to be fired up. And that's when I realized that I wasn't done personally playing yet. And so we went on a ski trip with the youth group, and those ski trips, I always love those. I think we went to Breckenridge for this one. And during, at the end of the ski trip, you talk about how much you care about everybody and how you really got to know a lot of the kids and stuff. And I was going to something called a scout camp, where you pay money to have scouts come out and you run and they videotape you and you do all these drills and whatnot. And then they send out the video to all the teams, and then you have a potential chance to get signed by by another team. And when I was there, it was in, I think it was in Plano, Texas. And I remember the hotel, the night before we had to go out and run, there was a huge tornado, and they got everybody in the hotel down in the lobby because the tornado was very close and it was very scary. And I was just like, are we really going to do this tomorrow after like an almost tornado? That's kind of ridiculous. And we did go. The tornado, we survived the tornado. We went out to this AstroTurf field to run all these drills. It was wet and it was, you know, kind of cold and kind of ridiculous. And I remember back at the time I had a beard. It was kind of funny. I looked kind of scruffy. So because the weather had been so bad, there weren't a whole lot of scouts that showed up at that particular scout camp. But there was one guy, Rich Sneed from the Houston Oilers, that was there. I ran through my drills and stuff, and he pulled me aside, had me run a few more drills, wanted to know who my agent was, and I didn't really even have an agent at the time. And he said, okay, well, we're going to give you a call in a couple days and see what we can do for you. I said, okay. I mean, I was just a kid. I really hadn't made any money. I mean, yeah, I was, went through Vanderbilt, got my degree in anthropology. I had no idea what I was going to do with that. But it was just really interesting because I had no idea what I had a chance to do. And 3 days later, the personnel guy from the Oilers called me up and said, we're going to offer you $110,000 or $104,000, something like that. And, you know, it's a free agent contract for you to come out. I said, oh, my God, okay, that would be phenomenal. So go out to Houston, meet a lot of great guys. It was Steve McNair's first year. He was really a funny guy. And there were some other people from, Jeremy Nunley was there from Alabama. They'd won the national championship the year before. Knavis McGee was one of the defensive ends that was there. They'd won at Colorado when he was there. And Ray Childress, the legend back in the day, it was his last season, and just all these other people. That Irv Eatman, this was hilarious. This was one of the first 300-pound offensive linemen in the NFL. Now they're like almost 400 pounds, but he was such a nice guy. And I remember he was playing his 13th season, and he was going to play one more season because he didn't want to end on 13 years. And I was just like, wow, what an interesting perspective on life. Where, and I'm sure everybody has challenges you don't realize or don't know about, but just seems so easy for him. I'm like, wow, you're going to just play another season just because you want to. It doesn't have anything about, you know, if you make it or not. So just thought that was interesting. But anyway, so after I played for the Oilers, they decided to send me over to Scotland and play in NFL Europe. So I played in NFL Europe. We won the championship. I actually met my wife there, which was great. And it just is one of those things where you never know what's going to happen. I never thought I was going to have a passport and get a passport, go to Scotland, play in all these different countries. And it's just, like I said, the reason I'm telling you all these, I'm not trying to say, hey, it's so great. I'm just saying you have to focus. And I lost my focus when I was with the 49ers and just decided, you know, I wasn't 100%. I wasn't all in. I didn't really know if it was going to work. And sometimes you go all in and it doesn't work. But then it's just testing how determined you are to get what you want. So you almost have to have an irrational desire to get what you want and where you want to be. And that is just kind of how it is. And so after I played football, I played arena football and other things like that. But then I went on to become a doctor of chiropractic. And the natural holistic ways that chiropractors look at how the body works and how it has a natural ability to heal itself, that was something that I was really fascinated with. And I had, you know, something back in the eighth grade, I'd started wearing glasses because I wanted to wear glasses because I thought it would be kind of a cool thing. I thought it made everybody look smarter. And so I was wearing glasses, but then when I started playing all this football, the glasses kind of became an issue because I couldn't wear glasses while I was playing football, hated wearing contacts because I was always touching my eyes and stuff like that. So I realized, now that I was a chiropractor, that there had to be a natural solution to vision, to heal your vision in a way that you didn't have to wear glasses. And that's when I came across the Bates method. And Bates was an ophthalmologist in New York back in the 1800s that came up with some amazing different exercises that you can do that actually help heal your eyes, because he looked at glasses kind of as a crutch. And so if you have a broken leg and you're using a crutch, if the leg heals but you still keep using the crutch, then the leg is never really going to heal as well as it should. So I started doing these exercises, and in a shockingly quick amount of time, a short amount of time, I was able to get rid of my glasses, didn't have to wear them anymore. And that was shocking to me. So I mentioned that to my patients, because my patients were like, hey, you're not wearing your glasses. What happened with your glasses? And so I started telling them about it. And so they said, well, you need to do a talk or something about that, because I would love to get rid of my glasses as well. So I went on to come up with three different books. You Don't Need Your Glasses or Contacts, Natural Ways to Correct Your Vision. I also had 20 Foods, 20 Surprising Foods for Clearer Vision, and also Chiropractic for Clearer Vision. And then I've gone on to create a website. I'm actually working on a website right now on all these different things that help to optimize your vision, which is all about optimizing your health as well. So now, if you're interested in any of these success techniques or any of the vision stuff, because I have gone on to work with a phenomenal chiropractor in Huntington Beach, Dr. John Bergman, and he and I have come up with a membership site and a lot of other really interesting things that have helped other people get educated on the natural way that the body works. And so you can get my success. There's a goal setting and success, online success for all the entrepreneurs out there that are interested in raising money or making money online. You can get that at drjohndewitt.com/10tips. So it's just drjohndewitt.com/10 and then T-I-P-S, no spaces. Or you can also go to, for the foods, for any healthy foods, you want to get a list of healthy foods that help help heal your vision, that's at relaxtoclarity.com/20foods. And so that's the number 20 and then foods with no spaces. So those are some free things that you can get that to help get you started on achieving the goals, visualizing the goals, get what you want, focusing. If it's health that you want, if it's clear vision that you want because you always feel like you have to wear your glasses, that's one thing that's interesting that I found is a lot of my patients would say, well, I have to have my glasses. And when you say that to yourself, subconsciously you keep telling yourself over and over and over again that you have to wear your glasses, so that if you don't have your glasses, you literally cause yourself to have more strain and stress psychologically in the eyes, and then you won't be able to see clearer. Because that's one of the things that Dr. Bates mentioned, was that you can't go in and try to see better. You just have to embrace it and see better. So it's one of those things where it's all about relaxation. You have to be able to deep breathe, because deep breathing is so important to relax the eye muscles, because it's all about the extraocular eye muscles. You have six muscles around the outside of the eye that can actually change the shape of the eye itself. So if you're nearsighted or farsighted, you can actually change where the retina is and where the focal point is for the lens. So everybody focuses on the lens, think, oh, we need to fix the lens, you need to get LASIK, you need to get all this stuff. That's not necessarily the case, because if you have a lens and you are focusing, the focal point is in the wrong point. If it's in front, you're nearsighted. If it's behind the retina, you're farsighted. If you can change where that actual retina is, where the focal point is, where it's focusing, then you're going to be able to focus clearer. And so there's all different kinds of ways. If you suffer from cataracts, macular degeneration, glaucoma, things like that, there's foods you can eat that can help reduce all of those symptoms, all of those conditions, because those are actually just symptoms that show that there's a problem. So with cataracts, it's the protein in the lens of the eye. And if you eat more legumes, such as lentils or black-eyed peas, things like that, then in countries where they eat more legumes, like in India, there's a statistically significant lower rate of cataracts, and they connected it to eating more legumes. Blueberries are a great thing to help decrease the pressure in the eye, which is what leads to glaucoma. Now, glaucoma is something that can be very, very traumatic. It increases the pressure in the inside the eyeball itself, and it starts to pinch off where that optic nerve comes in. And so you don't want to have pressure in the eyes. That's why back in the day they used to blow that little air thing where you had to look in the eye and it would blow in the optometrist's office. It would blow a little impulse of air to check the pressure in your eye. You don't want to have high pressure in the eye, so eat a handful of blueberries every day. So these are just a few of the things that you can do, natural health solutions, and you can do a variety of different things. Because one of the things when I was in Houston that I thought was so interesting was Steve Watterson, the strength coach there, he sat me down and he said, okay, you have a Ferrari. You're a professional athlete. You have a Ferrari. You are a Ferrari. Now, if you have a Ferrari, are you going to put cheap gas in a Ferrari? Or are you going to put really good, high-quality 91-octane gas in a Ferrari? And obviously, what he's saying is, if you want to have optimal health, you have to have optimal nutrition. And so you don't need to go down and be eating the donuts and having coffee every day and having soda, having these big gulp sodas just because you need the caffeine. It's insane. There's no reason anyone should have to have 72 ounces of anything other than water. I mean, it's toxic. So here's the thing. I believe that we all have the innate awareness and knowledge that when we do something, we know if it's good for us or we know if it's bad for us. So the goal of this show is going to be to have people be more aware of what's good for them, what's bad for them, and just to get real with themselves, because you know it's not good for you to eat fried foods. You know, it's just obvious. You know that you need to have your vegetables. You know you need to have some fruits. You need to know you have lots of water. You need to have that water and be hydrated. Dehydration is a huge cause of dementia, mental issues, because your brain can't function without that water. So this is the goal of the show, and we're going to be on every Tuesday morning at 9:30. We're going on a cruise next week, so hopefully my internet connection will allow me to do the show next Tuesday at 9:30. But we're going to talk about a variety of different things, from chiropractic things, football injuries, how to recover from workouts, how to get stronger and be stronger physically, mentally, emotionally. And if there's more vision questions, feel free to send me questions. You can contact me at support@relaxedclarity.com for any vision questions. And my website is drjohndewitt.com. You can find all the different things there that you might need. But I know this first episode seems like it was all about me, but like I said, I just wanted you to know that I'm just like you. I've been through all the struggles and tribulations and made it to the other side, and so can you.